This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Of course, in the first segment of the show, I just gave you a full news update on COVID-19, but let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's tap into some expertise and talk about some of the underlying factors that are going on with the most recent variant of COVID. To help us do that is Dr. Gerald Evans, an infectious disease specialist at Queen's University, who joins us from Kingston, Ontario. Hey, good morning, Dr. Evans. Thank you for making time for us today. We're so appreciative.
Good morning, Dave. Yeah, happy to be here.
So, Dr. Evans, I think over the course of the last 2 years, we've been doing a lot of definitions. We're learning a lot of new words, the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic. Well, one of the words that's been tossed around quite a bit in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and we'll dive into this a little bit further as we talk about the state and future of COVID in Canada. Overall, how would you define an endemic?
So an endemic is when it is applied to a viral pathogen like SARS-CoV-2, the cause of COVID-19, is essentially a scenario where the virus continues to circulate in very low levels all around the globe amongst people, but without causing these tremendously huge either epidemic waves or, as we've been seeing in the last 2 years, these pandemic waves. And that's really, for instance, would be a description of what happens with other coronaviruses. There are human coronaviruses that have circulated for many years. They sort of float around the community in general. They tend to increase their activity during the wintertime season, and then they disappear again, but continue sort of low-level circulation. So a lot of it has to do with the sort of background that they're always around, but they're not causing these huge, large increased numbers of cases, either in epidemic proportions or pandemic proportions.
Of course, in the moment right now, especially over the course of the last 8 weeks in Canada, the last 10 weeks globally, we've been talking a lot about the Omicron variant, which is spreading quickly. How might that impact the way in which Canada and the world may move towards that endemic phase?
Right. So not that I can predict that this is what's going to happen.
Right. Of course.
What you've got right now, though, is a kind of a good scenario. You've got a variant of SARS-CoV-2, Omicron, which tends to produce a milder form of disease. And when I say milder form of disease, what it's essentially doing is it's causing more of a common cold syndrome, what we in medicine call an acute nasopharyngitis, versus the sort of pneumonia that was very much attributed to the original virus and to Alpha and to Delta. And that's good because it's not going to produce a lot of death in morbidity and mortality. And I would say that particularly in vaccinated folks. Folks who are vaccinated are amazingly well protected from severe disease from Omicron. And also, by the way, Alpha and Delta, if they were still circulating around. The other thing is it's kind of outcompeted the other variants. So it's now become the dominant variant pretty well all around the world. And with that large amount of transmission, which occurs because it kind of evades a little bit of the prior immunity that we had from vaccination and very much so from previous infection, it allows for a broader sort of side of the population to have encountered it and to have developed some immunity. And that's a good mix because it means it's not going to kill people as much, which is what we worry about mostly and what we worried about with COVID, because it has a fatality rate 10 times that of influenza when we were looking at the original variants. And so that's a perfect mix for it to establish itself in the population, continue to circulate, outcompete other variants that might arise, because we still have to worry about that as a concern. And then it'll just do what the other coronaviruses do, which is creates sort of minor mutations, which are not really exciting. They don't invoke the necessity of drawing up a new Greek letter to describe them, and that will establish them into the population. So it's possible that Omicron might be starting to do that exact sort of process. And we know for sure, it's almost certainly how all of the other coronaviruses that we deal with, and there's a bunch of them, four of them, chief ones, that's almost certainly how they entered into the human population, probably again from an animal reservoir.
Some folks are definitely going to take some hope from that answer and a lot of the analysis we've seen around the Omicron variant. In fact, in jest, you hear people saying, well, you know, I'm vaccinated. I'm triple shotted now. Maybe I should just expose myself to COVID to get this over with. What do you think of people, maybe even if they're making that in jest, what do you think of people kind of putting that mindset out there?
Yeah, it's not the best strategy, not the least of which people have to understand. If you've had three doses of this vaccine and you're within about, you know, 2 or 3 months of that third shot, it's actually kind of hard to get Omicron. The vaccine continues to protect against infection in up to about 50% of people who have received three doses. So you could expose yourself to it, but you're not going to get infected. And then I think the other thing and the more important thing is that vaccine-induced immunity to coronavirus is clearly superior to the immunity you get from natural infection, if you want to call it that. Mm. And that's because your immune system does a really good job of fine-tuning the immune response to a variety of different potential variants that might arise. Whereas with Omicron, if you were to get it and get infected, you probably have a slightly increased immunity against Omicron in terms of getting infected again. But that's likely to be short-lived with what we know about other coronaviruses. So it's not a really good strategy. You should avoid getting Omicron. I've certainly seen patients and talked to acquaintances who have unfortunately become infected with Omicron. And it's not a very pleasant cold. I mean, it sort of would be right up there in the, boy, that was a bad cold, or even a mild flu to some degree. And it's just not a good thing to have. And people really, you know, don't feel well for a number of days with that. So it's not a good strategy.
Yeah. Milder does not necessarily mean mild. And that's one of those important distinctions when we talk about language in this space. Similar experience with a few of my friends who've reported being really down and out for 4 to 7 days when they've caught it, which, you know, doesn't sound too pleasant. Not to mention things like the possibility of long COVID, losing your taste for over a year doesn't sound too great, especially if you're a little food obsessed like I am. Dr. Evans, overall, over the course of the last 2 years, what do you think we've learned about this disease, but maybe even more specifically, some lessons learned about future pandemics, not to sort of put that out in the ether?
Yeah, no, I mean, we've certainly learned a lot more about coronaviruses. When I was briefly a research fellow at the University of Calgary many years ago, after I completed my ID fellowship as a physician, I actually studied coronaviruses in a laboratory with Dr. Robert Anderson out there. And we, coronaviruses were of interest, and we played around with a mouse hepatitis virus, which doesn't cause problems for humans. But this has really expanded our knowledge. And what it's also taught us is that coronaviruses are one of those groups of viruses, family of viruses that are potentially going to lead to future pandemic. You know, we saw SARS in 2003, that was a coronavirus. We've seen MERS around 2012, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome virus, and now COVID-19 caused by SARS-CoV-2. So that understanding is going to lead us to develop probably what is going to be a universal coronavirus vaccine in order to prevent sort of future rises of these kinds of pandemic viruses. Because up until now, we've been really concentrating our efforts on influenza, because we know that influenza causes pandemics. And of course, we still have to worry about that possibility kind of going into the future. I'm trying to remember the second part of your question here, if you wanted to fire it back.
It was sort of just what we've learned over the course of the last couple of years and what that might mean for future pandemics. And I think you identified it a little bit right there, saying that we're going to start seeing elements of just general coronavirus vaccine. And I wonder if we may start seeing that incorporated into flu shots down the road. There's going to be an element of COVID shots inside overall flu shots, or am I in a big stretch right there?
No, not really. We don't know what the frequency of, say, repeat vaccines would be as we emerge out of the pandemic. It could be annual, like we see with flu shots, but it might be something that's biannual. That's related to the fact that the immunity to coronaviruses, when you get them from the seasonal human ones that we see, typically lasts for 12 to 18 months. But protective immunity, the immunity from getting sick from those viruses, oftentimes lasts for maybe 1 or 2 decades. So, you know, those are all sort of getting coming into the mix. But I think the one thing about this pandemic, and I was involved in influenza pandemic planning for many years back in the 20-aughts. And we always talked about a lot of aspects of behavioral science. Now, I'm not a behavioral scientist, but I work with a bunch of really great behavioral scientists here in Ontario on the behavioral sciences working group of the Ontario COVID-19 science table. And they're the ones that are really going to be able to dissect apart things, because the challenge of this pandemic has been behaviors and human behaviors. And as somebody who does infection prevention control at my hospital here in Kingston Health Sciences Center, we know that infection control and prevention is really a behavioral science. We need to get people to work with us in order to reduce the likelihood of transmission, to do all the right things, and certainly here in the hospital, so that we don't see transmission events occurring between staff and patients. And that behavioral science component is huge. And of course, you know, you've been probably following the what is almost a kind of a polarization in society about how we should handle this pandemic, from people who, you know, just want to close everything down and wait till everything's died out, to people who think that this is a mild problem and we should just go about our daily lives. And really the balance lies in the middle of doing right things, doing carefully thought out, measured activities that are reduced transmission, because we have vulnerable people out there, and it's the vulnerable people in our society that we need to protect.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Evans, we're so grateful for your time today. Thank you for your insight, and thank you for all the excellent work that you and your colleagues have been doing throughout not just this pandemic, but for the last 20 and 30 years.
Oh, thank you very much, David. It was a pleasure to be on the show.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.